Hi everyone, welcome to episode 11 of SEO Tales. My name is Itamar Blau, I'm joined with Craig Campbell, and today we're going to be talking about scaling an agency. And now Craig, you've obviously been with agencies before, I've worked in agencies before, so this is quite an interesting topic, especially during a pandemic where we've seen quite a lot of changes in terms of agencies in digital marketing. So I think let's get right into it and think of what the reasons are why people start agencies. So Craig, I'd like to hear from your experience why you decided to start agencies.
So for me personally, and I think I'm going to actually go against the grain here. I didn't set out to start an agency as such. And I think more people I've spoke to over the years are also in the same boat. So what happened was, you know, I was working freelance in the house, but like you're going to be doing just now. And before you know it, you get fed up of working in the house and you're like, I could do with an office space because, you know, working at home probably has a time scale on it. So the first thing I done was got an office space, and I used to drop the wife off at work, go to my office space, do my work, and then go and pick her up when she finished. So I'd done like, I tried to get a routine of a full-time day job, because freelance life was killing me, literally, you know, working in the middle of the night. But from there, you know, things were going well and I was starting to get my routine back. And then you need a sales guy, you need a content writer. You know, you just network and you get speaking to people and you're like, fuck, you know, I'm going to take a little gamble here. Do you want to come here and work and sell more and we can do that? And then before you know it, you've got a web developer on board. Before you know it, you've got two content writers, another SEO guy. Because obviously, even as a freelancer, you know, you start out doing stuff and then, you know, word of mouth just spreads quite quickly and people are like, oh, he's really good. And before you know it, you have to have an agency. It wasn't something I sat and thought, I'm going to build an agency. And I think a lot of people are the same in that respect. And obviously, reasons why you would want to do that anyway, we're all here to make money. You know, doing client work is something that of course you can make money from, get clients signed up and retainers, make money and all that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, it's probably every young person's dream, you know, girl or boy, is probably to run their own business. You know, maybe even subconsciously, you know, who doesn't want to run their own business, you know? So I think that's probably why, you know, if you find yourself, you know, in digital, whether you're a social media marketer or whether you're whatever, you know, you can get all these bolt-ons and get someone in. You know, I'm an SEO guy, I can't do design, but it was very easy for me to get the design work in, offload it to a guy in the office, and then, you know, get in about the SEO side of things. So for me, building an agency is one of those weird things that you just find yourself doing. You know, you don't set out to do it. And I think if you ask most of the guys that have got agencies, they probably follow a similar trend.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with a lot of the stuff you're saying there, because like I planned to start an agency and it was something that I was working on for about 18 months, really, before the pandemic hit. And so that kind of ruined that plan for me, as I'm sure many other people, I suppose, in these situations had loads of kind of new ventures pretty much collapse because of it. But this leads on quite nicely to the next point, which is very, very prominent right now, and that's the office versus remote working for agencies. So what is your take on that, Craig? Because you obviously have an office. So what do you like think is better to do moving forward? And are you going to change what you're doing now?
I'm not 100% sure now. Listen, it's great to work from home and all of that kind of stuff, but it comes down to your circumstances. Like, I've got a young kid and trying to get some work done without him pulling at my laptop and stuff like that can be hard work. And you don't want to say to him, you know, piss it off or whatever. So sometimes having an office space to go to just to get your head down and crack out some work isn't a bad thing. I'm not sure, you know, I think with the pandemic and stuff, again, speaking to other people, I know a lot of other people are deciding just to get rid of the office. They now realize that you can work remotely. There's software and everything where you can track people's time, computer usage, and, you know, do you really need to be sitting in an office on top of each other? No, but I think as human beings, we all like to talk to other human beings. And you know, I think also with the pandemic, we've also felt the other side of that, where you're sitting alone, you can't go out and see your friends, you can't go out and socialise, and you can't even have banter in the workplace. And I think banter in the workplace, just get in, you know, like in my office, we have games of table tennis, just talking shit to each other, trolling each other, you know, it all makes the day go in a little bit quicker. And I think the human interaction thing is something I certainly miss. If I'm being honest, I wouldn't be adverse to doing something like 3 days in the office, 2 days working from home, or 2 days in the office, 3 days working from home. But then it raises the question, overheads. Do you really need those overheads so that you can have a bit of fun and stuff like that as well? Because people are looking at it now saying, I can cut away, you know, X amount of money for the office, and, you know, that's money that can go right into my back pocket. It's pure profit. So I think you need to balance it up in terms of mental health, being able to deal with other people, also depending on your current situation, you know, getting away from your kids to get your head down and do work, and various other bits and bobs. You know, I'm a guy that struggles to motivate himself, you know, sometimes in the house, and to give myself a good shake. Whereas if I'm in an office, you know, that's my kind of place to do work. And yeah, I think it really depends on the person. I mean, what you were previously going to start an agency, you have worked from home, you have worked in agencies. I mean, you're obviously younger, and, you know, I worked from home for 4 years. Try doing that, and, you know, you're watching Jeremy Kyle every day. So I think you're probably in a position where you're maybe not able to answer it, probably because you've not had to sit at home for 4 years. But I think there is that argument where you have to get out the house as well, whereas it's probably quite cool for you because you've been doing uni, you worked in an agency, you've done a bit of working in the house, and you're probably sitting in a position going, it's actually not bad sitting in the house doing a bit of work. But, you know, think of it, 3 or 4 years, you're not getting to talk to guys, you know, on a frequent basis and stuff like that. So, I mean, what are you enjoying just now yourself?
I think, well, the points you mentioned, and I think relating it to my experience, and obviously I haven't been working in the house for 4 years, but I think currently I just enjoy the kind of freedom of it, being able to, at least, well, the time that you save, that you don't have to commute in, and the money that you save, especially in London, having to take the tubes every day and things like that, that's money that gets added up really quickly. And the commute time as well, that can be 2 hours of the day that now I've got to do other things, to do more things that I enjoy, and really being able to manage my time how I want to. And I feel like, for me, that's quite liberating. I quite enjoy it. But then again, obviously, there are certain things, for example, from agency life that I do miss. Obviously, you do get the lack of socialization. That's not to say that, you know, you can't socialize with people anyway, because obviously we've got the tools that you can do that. But, you know, I just think in terms of the way we're heading in the future, I think things are going to be a lot more remote. So not even just agencies, but, like, even I know a few agencies now who are literally going fully remote. After this, because as soon as you see the viability of remote working, and then you couple that with the expenses and the overheads that you can potentially mitigate by not having an office space, then that's obviously a choice that you need to make as an agency owner.
One thing I would add to that, though, as an agency owner, one thing that we always have a problem with is productivity, keeping the staff motivated, even in an office. And for me, there's going to be a fear that, you know, you allow people a little bit more freedom and less work's getting done, less productivity. So that is I think that's the key challenge. Like, someone like yourself, I think it really comes down to your personality. You may be able to motivate yourself a hell of a lot better than someone like me. And that would be a good thing. You're maybe more suited to that. But, you know, I had a web developer once who said to me, Craig, it takes me an hour and a half to get to work. It takes me an hour and a half to get home. Why don't I work from home from now on? Because I could get 3 hours more done. But basically what that meant is he wanted 3 hours extra in his bed. It didn't work out very well. So in theory, saying that and you get more time and all that shit is all good and well if that turns out that way. But what you find is people get lazy. I've had friends that have went down to the 4-day working week, you know, trying to, you know, motivate people to work faster and be a bit more productive and do 5 days within a 4-day working week. But the standards slip all the time. So I think it's going to come down to they may even have to do a different pricing model where you're paid per job or something. So if you're working from home, they need to be able to G you up in some way so that you're rewarded for actually putting the time and effort in and you can't duck and dive and hide in the background.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate that different people obviously have different capabilities, different motivation levels. You know, some people are quicker at certain jobs than others, but I guess it's down to, you know, the people who you're hiring, whether or not you can trust them if they are remotely to get the job done. And I think that's really, really important. And that's really down to your management style and the way that you lead your team. But let's kind of move on the sense of, you know, scaling agencies, whether it's with an office or remote. Let's talk about some tools that you can use in order to help scale an agency. So what have you used in the past, Craig, that has helped you scale your agency?
Tools that have helped to scale. I mean, there's lots of tools depending on what you mean by scale. You know, doing things and being more productive, you know, integrating, you know, SEMrush and whatnot into, what's the Google tool called again that everyone uses? I forgot the name of it again. The one that everyone uses for reporting, Google Data Studio.
Oh, great.
So, you know, customizing things like that, you know, using the APIs in Google Data Studio to kind of automate the reporting and customize it the way you want that to happen. I think, you know, a lot of agencies spend a lot of time client handholding and reporting. You know, it's one of the biggest pain points. So I think trying to at least semi-automate that process, or if you can automate it in full, even better. But I think that is something that I think is really, really important. Other things in terms of tools, you know, using the right tools like SEMrush, Ahrefs and everything to do your analysis, competitor analysis is key. You know, you can do that manually, but, if, you know, as an agency owner, you're working with, you know, 20, you know, 10, 20, 30 clients. You need to be able to churn that stuff out quick. You know, and it's not even just about the tool usage, it's the processes that are in place within an agency, I think, are key to scale. You know, what happens when a client comes in? How do they get onboarded? What's the first thing you do with any given client, regardless? You know, is it an audit? You know, how does the wheel start going when a guy drops his money in your bank account? What happens from there? And obviously there's other things like Trello or, you know, using a CRM so that your team and everyone knows what's going on as well. Because again, a lot of agencies, there's a particular guy like an SEO manager who sometimes throws stuff in his head. Like me, when I was my agency, there was no CRM. It was just fucked up. And you know, it was all working from my brain. So if I was off, I wasn't feeling it. You know, the staff weren't really. So, you know, someone's got a hold of one of my staff and said, "Where are we with this particular project?" They would be like, "I have no idea." You know. So I think having the processes, having, you know, the team, you know, and you know, Trello or whatever, you know, all fully understand what happens when this drops into this Trello board. You've got to do this and then pass it to that guy, or, you know, whatever, or you've got to go and buy this gig, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. So I think in terms of tools as such, you know, there's a lot of different things. It really depends on what your agency does, you know, whether it comes down to site auditing. You know, a lot of agencies don't actually do any work. They simply do consultancy and they'll audit stuff. So you'll need like Sitebulb, Screaming Frog, and you know, SEMrush or whatever, just to, you know, and part of that process maybe you run it through all three of them and then throw it over to a guy to do some manual checks, and then churn out a report and give it to a customer and, you know, give them some guidance as to what the developer needs to do to fix that. But I think, you know, the thing for me with any agency is getting those processes on point. That is the thing that whenever I see an agency, there is no processes or very poor processes, and that's what stops them from scaling. Because if you've got the processes right, you can hire 2 more content writers, 5 more content writers, 100 more content writers. It really doesn't matter. And the same with link builders. If you've got all your outreach process in place or whatever it's going to be, then that's also very easy to scale. So as long as that content links, technical reporting and all of that kind of stuff's all kind of semi-automated, or you have the staff in charge of being able to run that like a Ferris wheel, if you like, then, you know, you can scale the shit out of it and deal with more clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like you mentioned, the processes that you have in place, obviously from the get-go, and that's something that you need to really get a firm understanding of your own process, because how are you going to be able to tell other people when you hire them, when you bring them on board? You need to be able to get the right processes in place and also make sure that they are efficient. And if they're not efficient, and it's also about tracking your processes, you need to be critical in terms of what you're doing to see if something's not working well or something's taking too long, you may need to change it. And obviously having the processes are essential, and like you mentioned, if you're hiring any content writers and things like that, that's obviously the stuff that they get briefed, and the processes that you give them, that's going to dictate how well they do their jobs. But let's kind of move on to virtual assistants then, and if we're talking about using virtual assistants to scale processes, so how would that work? And also, what kind of experiences have you had using VAs?
I mean, I've used many VAs over the years for outrageous amounts of different things, you know, from scraping websites to finding expired domain names, to writing content, to building links, you know, VAs to build websites. You know, you can get a VA to do anything. In most cases, people use VA to do a very, very specific job, though. You know, like go and scrape stuff and find me people's email addresses or whatever it was going to be back in the day when you used to spam everyone. You know, or even now, you know, people use VAs to write guest posts. You know, for example, Gary Wilson, you know, he sells a whole bunch of guest posts, and you know, he's got to have VAs just to write those guest posts out with the VAs that are reaching out to get the links and you know, doing the negotiation and all that process. He's actually got someone who just churns out content after content after content, and that's what you want to do, is get VAs for very particular job, you know, because what you don't want to do is basically give a VA 4 or 5 things to do, and then they become an important member of your team. Now, I'm not saying that for, you know, but as a businessman, you need to be selfish and say, if that content writer's crap or slacks off, we just need to be able to bin him and replace him with another content writer. Whereas if it's someone who's doing 4 or 5 very good things for you and they become a vital component of your process, then that, you know, they can maybe hold you to ransom, they can maybe, you know, demand more money, they may start to slack off and can't do anything about it. So I think using virtual assistants to do very, very particular jobs allows you the ability, you know, if someone slacks off, you can replace them like that overnight. And I think that's, again, the way you want to run it, because when you do fully rely on it or give someone too much responsibility, in a lot of cases, they'll end up fucking off and doing it for themselves. So, you know, I know it seems harsh, but when it comes to virtual assistants, you know, get them to do that job and that job only. Don't give them too much information, would be my advice, because they will bugger off. They'll go away and tell people your processes. They'll be stolen by your competition, or they'll go and set up on their own. You know, I've had all of that kind of stuff happen to me. So, you know, you're talking to someone that doesn't have a bond with you. They're not your friend. You know, they're there to make money. And the minute someone comes along and offers them, you know, $50 more, then, you know, your whole business and processes is, been given to the next guy. So be careful with it as well.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good advice.
Have you used VAs before?
I've not used VAs myself, but I was kind of delving into different sites of getting VAs, kind of seeing what people are looking for, how much people are charging, those kinds of things. But obviously, I've got friends who use VAs, and I think for them, they'll all have kind of different experiences. I think the kind of things that you mentioned is more the very cost-efficient, very business-focused approach, which is, you know, you don't want to compromise the way you run your business by giving a VA too much to do, that they know all of your secrets and then they can go off and do their own thing. And I feel like that's the approach that I would take if I was to hire a VA. I'd just make sure that it's very specific what they're doing, just one thing at a time, obviously for your own safety, per se, like for your business. And I think that's really, really important. But of course, other people have their own ways of working with VA. So, you know, there's no right or wrong. I think it's just down to who it is that you get on board, and also just down to how much they like you, really, or how motivated they are to kind of do the things that you ask for them.
Yeah. But, I mean, listen, I've got VAs, and I've got a VA just now who does a lot more than one job for me. Someone I do trust and have met in person multiple times, and, you know, do spend the time to see them at least once or twice a year. So listen, it can work for you. And if you get someone like that, you know, treat them with the respect they deserve, and you know, pay them what they deserve as well. Because there's not a lot of good people out there in any walk of life. So if you do get someone, you can break that VA mold, but I wouldn't really consider them a VA as such. They're just an employee now, and, you know, someone that I actually get on with and stuff like that, and have some form of relationship with, so obviously you can get them to do more and stuff like that. So it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's just down to the people at the end of the day, as with pretty much everything. So let's move on quickly to the last topic, which is about the future of agencies. So, I mean, I can give my perspective, you can give your perspective, and then let's see whether or not we agree or disagree. But I think personally that there's going to be less of a demand for agencies in the future, I think, in terms of the way that people's knowledge evolves around digital marketing and all the resources that are out there. And also, I mean, a lot of agencies have been getting quite bad connotations, because some people will hire an agency who just takes their money, does nothing. And then that person from there, they're just going to associate agencies as being just con men, just people who don't really do anything. So I personally think there'll be a decline in demand for agencies, or at least there's going to be more alternatives for people to actually get different things done, whether or not they do it themselves, whether or not they do it in-house. And that's kind of my perspective. So what do you take on that?
I would tend to agree with that. I think, you know, people are becoming wiser out there and more interested in, you know, the ins and outs of what an agency is and how SEO works. And, you know, I think a lot of agencies, we all know, charge higher rates because they've got massive overheads, more staff, all of that kind of stuff. Does it mean better work? Absolutely not. And I think that's something that the general public are now becoming aware of, because that, you know, guys I've spoke to have said, I'm not paying for their fancy office, you know, in the Shard in London, you know, or, you know, the owner's Ferrari or whatever. You know, I just want a good, cost-effective SEO strategy and someone to do it. And, you know, people are aware, remote workers, freelancers, VAs, you know, more and more people. It's just that with the increased amount of free courses, videos like this, you know, you don't have to go and pay an arm and a leg. I mean, listen, some agencies do good work and they've got PR people in there. They do a great job and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm not knocking every agency. You know, some agencies deserve what they charge, and that's all there is to it. But on the flip side, there's a lot of agencies out there charging that high rate and just giving out Fiverr gigs as work, and it's those guys. I think the, you know, the cream always rises to the top, and if you're doing a good, solid job and giving a massive ROI to a client, whether you're an agency, freelancer or not, then your job is safe. I just believe that those guys who start up agencies and take on the £200-300 a month clients and you know, try and do that at scale, they can't be servicing the clients properly. It's impossible. And they don't even have processes in place. They're just taking money and, you know, pissing it up against the wall, basically. And I think the future is bleak for those agencies. And I think people are now starting to see right through them. I think... Hopefully, I don't like seeing any business going out of business. There's room for us all. It's a multi-billion pound business, digital marketing. There's enough money for us all to make a good living, agencies included. So I think they all serve their purpose. I think one thing I would say in an agency's favour against using someone like me would be you get that hand-holding, you get those 4 meetings a month or 2 meetings a month that you want, where they'll, you know, sit with you and put stuff up in a whiteboard and talk pish to you. And, you know, some clients need that, some clients want that, and the guys are better suited to doing that than someone who can't be asked talking to them, because that someone like me just wants to get the job done. And I'll just say, right, with this money we could buy this, we could do that, get some content flung on here, do this, do that, job done. I don't want to talk shit all the time. So, so that's pretty much how I see it.
I laugh because it's just such a... I love the bluntness of the way you do things. It just makes me laugh sometimes. But no, it's all well and good. I mean, you've got your process set up. So that's all great. And I think on that note, we're out of time. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to SEO Tales. I've been Itamar Blauer with Craig Campbell, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Cheers.